Hi everybody, this is Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain. This is the truth about Ahmaud Arbery, the victim of a terrible killing that occurred in February in Georgia, for which just this last Wednesday, two men, a father and a son, have been arrested in connection with. Was it a vigilante action or was it self-defense? Let's cut through the rhetoric and get to the facts. And I will tell you what really happened, in my view, according to the facts and evidence. So let's look at the mainstream narrative, which is generating great sympathy, which I completely understand. This is from the New York Times by Charles Blow. The killing of Ahmaud Arbery, another black man falsely assumed to be a criminal, is dead. And here's a picture you've probably seen, this handsome young fellow smiling into the camera. And the article starts, the video is short and shocking. It's taken from the perspective of a vehicle following a young black man running at a jogger's pace. The jogger is 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery. Arbery approaches a pickup truck parked in the street. There are two white men, one outside the vehicle with a shotgun, 34-year-old Travis McMichael, and the other, his father, 64-year-old Gregory McMichael, standing aloft in the flatbed. The McMichaels had reportedly chased Arbery, blocking his path at another location, at which point he had turned around and jogged another way to avoid them. In the video, when the men encounter each other, there's immediately an altercation. Arbery and the younger McMichael fight for control of the shotgun. Shots are fired. Arbery tries to run away, but he is clearly wounded and his knees buckle. He collapses to the ground. The video ends. After Arbery fell, the younger McMichael rolled over the limp body to see if the male had a weapon. According to a police report, there was blood on McMichael's hands when the police arrived. Arbery died of his wounds. Terrible, terrible stuff. The NAACP put out an action alert from Georgia. Ahmaud Arbery was running in his neighborhood and was chased and murdered by two white supremacists. Contact the Liberty County District Attorney to demand that Gregory and Michael and Travis McMichael be charged for the murder of Ahmaud Arbery. I'm not sure that this kind of racial profiling really helps the situation. I don't see any evidence, or I've not seen any evidence, that they are white supremacists. Celebrities, of course, particularly sports celebrities, took to Twitter and other social media platforms to voice their outrage. LeBron James said, "We're literally hunted everywhere. Every time we step foot outside the comfort of our homes, can't even go for a damn jog, man. Like, WTF, man, are you kidding me? No, man, FR, are you kidding me? I'm sorry, Ahmaud, rest in paradise, and my prayers and blessings sent to the," as it continued. Another person said, "Reality, hate to see it, some won't speak, but out, they'll lose the endorsements they hold so dearly. This is not okay. How do I explain," says another celebrity, "what happened to Ahmaud Arbery, to my six-year-old son? The violence needs to stop." Another tweet, "The profiling and racial injustice needs to stop. Hashtag Ahmaud Arbery." And the picture, of course, of the young man and the caption, "I was murdered by an armed father and son who hunted me down and shot me as I jogged in a Georgia neighborhood. Neither of my killers have been charged. My name is Ahmaud Arbery." Now, of course, this has been changed. Now the men have been charged. So more senselessness. Video is heartbreaking. How many more mothers will have to bury their sons and daughters? Answers needed. So a lot of tension, a lot of frustration. I completely understand it from this perspective. So let's look at the people involved. This is Gregory and Travis McMichael. You've seen this picture, I'm sure, looking like the kind of stereotypical good old boys deliverance style in their khakis and baseball caps and squatting over a dead pig. You've seen their mugshots, I'm sure, down on the bottom with regards to Ahmaud Arbery. It's a nice picture usually of him in a tuxedo. The alleged picture on the bottom right of his mugshot, not so commonly seen. So let's talk about what happened. So Arbery was shot and killed February 23rd, Southeast Georgia. So the video has just been released. I'm not going to include it here. I'll do a follow-up, I'm sure. So what happened was a neighbor called 911 reporting that a black man in a white t-shirt was inside a house that was partially under construction and partially closed in. Now, that's not jogging behavior. So he wasn't out jogging. Nobody called the police because he was jogging. They called the police, or they called 911 because he was inside, illegally inside a house that was partially under construction and partially closed in. So this is a picture of the house here. You can't see, there's a little porta potty, which is probably how he knew that the house was under construction, a little porta potty on the front lawn. But he goes in, he spends, I don't know, 4 minutes or so inside the house. He comes out and runs, maybe because he heard or saw the man calling 911, but he hoofs it, man. He just goes fast. Now, it's reported as shoplifting. I've also read that it was a television, but the question of motive is important here, right? And we'll get to this as we go forward. So the history is that Ahmaud Arbery stole a television in 2018, which was a violation of the probation that he was under from 2013 when he was indicted on charges that he had brought a gun to a high school basketball game, which is, of course, a terrible thing to do. And he fled. He threw the gun away or hid the gun. They found it under a sandwich board, I think. An officer fractured his hand in hot pursuit. He was charged with a variety of things. But as a first offender, he got 5 years probation. But then he violated the probation with shoplifting. It appears to be a television. Could be something else. And so this is really, really important as to motive, which I'll get to in a few minutes. Now, the video has just been released. According to officials, there is video footage of a man matching Aubrey's description, burglarizing a home. Now, I don't know if the video that I watched of him going into this home is the same as him burglarizing a home, but we shall find out as we go forward. The theory, of course, is that if he was a thief, then he may have gone into this house to look for a hammer. There's some evidence that he had a hammer in the altercation with the younger McMichael. And so, was he in there looking for tools with which to burglarize? We don't know. We'll probably find out again over the course of the trial. Now, this is under contention. Some people say there was a string of recent burglaries and auto break-ins in the neighborhood where Arbery was running. Some people say there was just one and another one that was unreported. Again, we'll find out as we go along. On the day of the shooting, there were several 911 calls reporting a suspect matching Arbery's description looking into houses. So again, was he out there just jogging? Was he shot for jogging? Did people call, you know, the police because a young guy was jogging while black? Well, no, they were called because he went into this house. And this matters to motive as we go forward. So let's drop into the 911 calls, February 23rd, 2020. Dispatcher to the guy who sees Arbery going into the house we just looked at. And you said someone is breaking into it right now? No, it's all open, says the caller. It's under construction and he's running right now. Here he goes, right now. Dispatcher says, okay, well, what is he doing? Caller, he's running down the street. And then there's some garbled, some hot stuff that's hard to hear. At 1.911, dispatcher says, that's fine, I'll get the police out there. I just need to know what he was doing wrong. Right. Because if the police are going out, they need to know what was done wrong so that they can prepare themselves for the level of danger that they might be facing. So, the father, Gregory McMichael, is standing in his front yard when he sees Arbery hauling ass, as he puts it, down the street. So he's near his neighbor. He's next to his neighbor. I think he can see the house that Arbery was in. Arbery is then running down the street. Now, then is where the disaster begins. Gregory McMichael and his son Travis got guns, got in a truck, and followed Arbery. So, the police report states that prior to parking their truck, because the violence erupted around the parked truck, the McMichaels had shouted for Arbery to stop and answer questions multiple times, but were ignored. So what happened? They parked their truck. Arbery ran around the passenger side of the truck, then crosses in front and directly charges Travis McMichael, who was holding a shotgun. Ahmaud Arbery punches Travis McMichael several times and is himself shot several times. Very, very important. No shots were fired until after Arbery attacked, right? So, come on, look. If you want to go and shoot someone, you're just going to do a drive-by. You're going to shoot him. You're going to peel off. You're not going to sit there, park your car, and wait to shoot him until he's grappling with you for your shotgun. That's simply not how any kind of murder would work. And no shots were fired until after Arbery attacked. And there's a little picture down here. Sweet jogging boots, obviously kind of sarcastic. You can see, I don't know, it could be a shadow, could be any number of things. We'll find out over the course of the investigation. They don't particularly look like running shoes to me. They look a little bit more like construction boots or maybe boat shoes with a high heel. Oh, those are a high ankle. I don't know. But they don't look specifically like, I have a little bit of experience with this because I was a runner for quite some time when I was younger, a cross-country team, long-distance team. I used to run sort of 15, 20 miles occasionally, and you gotta aim for comfort. You gotta have your water. All right. So let's look at the police report. It goes like this. On Sunday, February 23rd, 2020, I responded to the intersection of Satilla Drive and Holmes Drive in reference to shots fired. While en route or en route, I was advised there were shots fired and a male on the ground bleeding out. A short time later, I was advised the male on the ground was deceased. Upon my arrival, I observed Officer Minshew setting up a perimeter. I began speaking with Gregory McMichael, who was a witness to the incident. McMichael stated, there have been several break-ins in the neighborhood, and further, the suspect was caught on surveillance video. McMichael stated he was in his front yard and saw the suspect from the break-ins hauling us down Satilla Drive towards Burford Drive. McMichael stated he then ran inside his house and called to Travis McMichael and said, Travis, the guy is running down the street. Let's go. McMichael stated he went to his bedroom and grabbed a .357 Magnum and Travis grabbed his shotgun because, quote, they didn't know if the male was armed or not. McMichael stated, quote, the other night, end quote, they saw the same male and he stuck his hand down his pants, which led them to believe the male was armed. McMichael stated he and Travis got in the truck and drove down Satilla Drive towards Burford Drive. McMichael stated when they arrived at the intersection of Satilla Drive and Holmes Drive, they saw the unidentified male running down Burford Drive. McMichael then stated Travis drove down Burford and attempted to cut off the male. McMichael stated the unidentified male turned around and began running back the direction from which he came, and Roddy attempted to block him, which was unsuccessful. McMichael stated he then jumped into the bed of the truck and he and Travis continued to Holmes in an attempt to intercept him. McMichael stated they saw the unidentified male and shouted, stop, stop, we want to talk to you. McMichael stated they pulled up beside the male and shouted, stop again, at which time Travis exited the truck with the shotgun. McMichael stated the unidentified male began to violently attack Travis and the two men then started fighting over the shotgun, at which point Travis fired a shot. And then a second later, there was a second shot. McMichael stated the male fell face down on the pavement with his hand under his body. McMichael stated he rolled the man over to see if the male had a weapon. So I'm not going to show this video, of course. You can find it online. But this is what's happening. So I've got two circles on the screen here. The one circle is the truck that is parked. The second is Aubrey running down the street. Again, it's hard to tell exactly how far, 20, 30 feet or so on, maybe 40 feet. He's running down the street towards the parked truck. Now, of course, if he felt like he was in grave danger, I'm not sure why he would be running towards the truck. Unless there's another reason, which I'll get to. So, let's talk about the district attorney. Okay, there's been a couple that have kind of come and gone for various reasons, conflict of interest. Jackie Johnson is the district attorney for the Brunswick Judicial Circuit. She recused her office, as Gregory McMichael, one of the men involved in the shooting, was a former investigator in her office. I've seen him referred to as an ex-cop, as an ex-detective, and as a former investigator. So let's just say he's nose deep in street law, right? I mean, the law that occurs and matters when you're out there on the street dealing with people in real time rather than, you know, courtroom law and so on. So the guy knew. He was, I think, mid-80s was when he started. So he had decades of experience, multi-decades of experience in street law, and this is really, really important when it comes to the citizen's arrest question. So George Barnhill is the district attorney in Waycross, and he sent the following letter to the Glynn County Police Chief sometime in April. He recused himself from the investigation shortly after sending the letter because of another conflict of interest involving his son. So I have slimmed down this letter a little bit, I guess unlike his chin, and let's say he says, I am the current elected district attorney for the Waycross Circuit. I have worked as a criminal prosecutor for some 36 years, as an assistant district attorney in Waycross and Brunswick, as chief assistant in Waycross for 20 years, and served as the district attorney the last 5 years. I have been actively involved in over 100 murder cases and assisted other prosecutors with at least 100 more. I have no idea how many aggravated assault cases involving gunshots and wounds of all types. Plus, I have attended countless schools, classes, and seminars on criminal prosecution and criminal acts and evidence. Myself and one of my senior trial attorneys have reviewed the evidence extensively and concur on all points. What are those points? I'll tell you. He says, as to the case at hand, Aubrey, it is my professional belief the autopsy confirms what we had already viewed as shown in the videotape, with the photographs and from the witness statements taken immediately at the scene. The autopsy supports the initial opinion we gave you on February 24th, 2020, right, day after, at the briefing room in the Glynn County Police Department, after reviewing the evidence you had at that time. We do not see grounds for an arrest of any of the three parties, right? The elder and the younger McMichael and the man who was filming, who was driving behind. So why? Why? Well, he said, it appears Travis McMichael, Greg McMichael, and Brian William were following in pursuit, burglary suspect, with solid first-hand probable cause in their neighborhood and asking slash telling him to stop. It appears their intent was to stop and hold this criminal suspect until law enforcement arrived. Under Georgia law, this is perfectly legal. Citizen's arrest, perfectly legal. Now, let's look at this statute. A private person, it says, may arrest an offender if the offense is committed in his presence or within his immediate knowledge. If the offense is a felony and the offender is escaping or attempting to escape, a private person may arrest him upon reasonable and probable grounds of suspicion. So there are lots of two-bit internet pseudo-lawyers out there who are trying to figure out, well, what constitutes immediate knowledge? Did he see something yesterday? Did he witness what was going on with the house that was under construction? Did he hear his neighbor? Did his neighbor tell him? Look, this guy, right, Greg, was a multi-decade veteran of the force. He knew the law. He knew what was possible. He knew what was allowable. He was confirmed by this district attorney. He was confirmed by senior lawyer, or at least one senior lawyer. So the idea that you're just going to read this and say, well, that doesn't count, that doesn't apply. I think I'm basically going to go with probably, well north of half a century of experience of these people looking at what happened, rather than someone who just says, well, I don't think it applies because I'm on the internet and I'm emotionally reactive. But here's the thing, too, because this debate is going on and on, does the citizen's arrest, is it valid? Was it right? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Let's say that the knowledge that Greg McMichael had as a former cop, former investigator, former detective, whatever the heck he was, let's say that he believed he had a good and just cause for a citizen's arrest. Let's say that he was wrong. That still doesn't give Aubrey the right to attack Travis McMichael, try and take his gun in order to kill Travis and Greg McMichael. I mean, that's why you take people's guns, right? To turn the guns on them. So it doesn't matter whether it was valid or not. Let's say that a police officer comes to arrest you and you don't think that the arrest is valid. Do you get to try and wrestle the cop away? Wrestle the gun away from the cop? Like you're in some sort of Ava Max song? Of course not. Of course not. Just because you think something is legally illegitimate does not give you the right to grab people's guns with, we assume, the intent of shooting them. If you grab a gun owner's gun, you've just given him permission to use deadly force to protect himself and not be prosecuted, certainly not in Georgia, at least not without massive public pressure. To the contrary. So that's important. They had a lot of knowledge, and even if it was invalid, the citizen's arrest, you don't deal with that by grabbing people's guns. DA goes on to say, it clearly appears Travis McMichael and Greg McMichael had firearms being carried in an open fashion. The investigation shows neither of them to be convicted felons or under felony supervision. They were in a motor vehicle owned by Travis McMichael under Georgia law. This is legal, open carry. And you can look at the statutes more yourself if you want to pause. So it was legal for them to attempt a citizen's arrest. It was legal for them to have guns. So far, legal. The DA continues, the video made by William Bryan clearly shows a shooting in real time. From said video, it appears Ahmad Aubrey was running along the right side of the McMichael truck, then abruptly turns 90 degrees to the left and attacks Travis McMichael, who was standing at the front left corner of the truck. A brief skirmish ensues, in which it appears Aubrey strikes McMichael and appears to grab the shotgun and pull it from McMichael. The shot is through Aubrey's right hand palm, which is consistent with him grabbing and pulling the shotgun at the barrel tip. The second and third wounds are consistent with the struggle for the shotgun as depicted in the video. The angle of the second shot, with the rear of the buttstock being pushed away and down from the fight, are also consistent with the upward angle of the blood plume shown in the video, and that McMichael was attempting to push the gun away from Aubrey while Aubrey was pulling it toward himself. The third shot, too, appears to be in a struggle over the gun. The angle of the shots and the video show this was from the beginning, or almost immediately became, a fight over the shotgun. Given the fact Aubrey initiated the fight, at the point Aubrey grabbed the shotgun, under Georgia law, McMichael was allowed to use deadly force to protect himself. And this is what's so frustrating when hearing everybody opine about this stuff. Aubrey was not killed because he was black. He was not killed because he was jogging. He's not killed because he was in a whitish neighborhood. He wasn't killed for any of those reasons. He was killed because he tried to grab a shotgun and wrestle a shotgun and punch a man against the law. Now people say, ah, yes, but you see, Aubrey was scared. He was alarmed. He was nervous. So what? Do we really want to live in a society where you can beat the hell out of people, grab their guns, try to kill them perhaps, and just say, well, I did it because I was scared, so it's fine, right? I mean, come on. I say this in brotherly appeal to black community leaders, white community leaders, every kind of community leader. Do we want a situation where somebody says, oh, I beat up that black guy because he scared me. He looked at me funny. I was alarmed. We don't want to live in that kind of world. We really don't. So the fact that he may have been alarmed by these two men does not give him the right to viciously attack and try to grab the gun away from one of the men. Nuh-uh. No, 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 no. That's not right. So he finishes up the DA. Just as importantly, while we know McMichael had his finger on the trigger, we do not know who caused the firings. Aubrey would only had to pull the shotgun approximately 1/16 to 1/8 of 1 inch to fire the weapon himself, and in the height of an altercation, this is entirely possible. Aubrey's mental health records and prior convictions help explain his apparent aggressive nature and his possible thought pattern to attack an armed man. It's really, really important. Like if you're grabbing at a gun, like if you got your finger on a trigger and somebody pulls your hand, pulls your forearm, or pulls the gun, it can shoot even though you're not pulling the trigger, right? So nobody even knows who shot. And the video is so blurry, and I doubt anyone remembers, but that's the reality, right? So this is the statute, use of force in defense. Once confronted with a deadly force situation, an individual is allowed to use deadly force to defend themselves or others. There's a no duty to retreat law in Georgia, just as there's no hate crime law. An individual is not required to back away from or submit to an attack. And the use of force, another statute, which is intended or likely to cause death or great bodily harm to prevent trespass on or other tortious or criminal interference with real property other than a habitation or personal property, is not justified unless the person using such force reasonably believes that it is necessary to prevent the commission of a forcible felony. And, most importantly perhaps, a person properly and legally defending themselves is immune from prosecution. And there was video. And in the video, no guns are being pointed at Ahmaud Arbery. It is perfectly legal to drive down the street, stick your head out the window and say, hey, stop, I want to talk to you. It's perfectly legal to say, I'm making a citizen's arrest. You need to stop. The police are on their way right now. All of that is perfectly legal. They say, oh, they were hunting him down. They were chasing him. This is all just rhetoric. The question is, what is legal? Is it legal to tell someone you want to talk to them? Of course, that happens all the time. You walk down the street and people say, hey, I want to sell you something, or will you sign my petition, or I want you to sign up for my charity. It happens all the time. You don't get to attack people because they say they want to talk to you, they want to ask you questions. But there's another reason, I think, which we'll get to. The DA concludes, for the above and foregoing reasons, it is our conclusion there is insufficient probable cause to issue arrest warrants at this time. As to any further issues on whether to present this to a Glynn County grand jury, that will have to wait for the next district attorney's review. Please consider this an open file until that decision is made and restrict the release of any information under Georgia Open Records Act requests. Sincerely, Georgie Barnhill, blah, blah, blah. Now, in a separate document, District Attorney Barnhill reports that video exists of Mr. Arbery, quote, burglarizing a home immediately preceding the chase and confrontation. And I assume that is him going into the house that is under construction, almost finished, and so on. And that video has now been released. And this is from News One, quote, Barnhill eventually left the case along with another prosecutor, Jackie Johnson, before him. Gregory McMichael used to work in Johnson's district attorney office in the Brunswick Judicial District, so there was a conflict of interest. Then Aubrey's mom, Wanda Cooper, urged Barnhill to recuse himself from the case after it was revealed that his son also works in Johnson's office where Greg used to work as an investigator since 1985. So, let's look at the path to the attack. So here you can see on the right-hand side of the screen, the video is parked on the right of the road. You can see Travis, he has a shotgun, which I think you kind of legally have to, you can't hide the shotgun like Matrix style in a long coat or anything. You have to show the shotgun. So he's out there with a shotgun. And Ahmaud Arbery runs up to the truck, runs towards the truck for quite some time, fairly leisurely pace. And then what he does is he runs up towards the truck and he runs to the right of the truck. And you can sort of see in the bottom right here, he's running around the truck. Again, fairly leisurely pace. And then what happens is when he gets to the front of the truck, sort of where the right headlight is, he then darts or lunges around the front of the truck and attacks the younger Mr. McMichael. And the shotgun fires three times, shooting Arbery through the hand and then killing him. Now, Arbery knew that there was a car behind him. I assumed that he'd been told that the police had been called, were on their way, and they were just trying to detain him on a citizen's arrest situation. So he knew there was at least one witness. Of course, people are coming out of their houses, I'm sure, and maybe grabbing their cell phones to film and so on. So, you know, if people have said the police are on their way, it's really hard to imagine that they're there to kill you because the police are on their way. It's very rare, if not impossible, to imagine that a murderer would call the police to show up to make sure they caught him. So, now, even if he attacks, which he did, of course, he attacks Travis McMichael, there is the elder McMichael on the flatbed of the truck. And so even if he'd taken out Travis, he would have been shot then by the older man in the flatbed of the truck. Now, the other thing, too, again, it's hard to imagine that Ahmaud Arbery even knew that these men were armed because they're in the car, right? In the car, if you've got a hip holster, then you can't see that over the window, the car window. You can't see that. And there's no evidence, of course, that they pointed any weapons at him because that's illegal. You can't point weapons at people. You can open carry, but you can't point weapons at people. So there's no evidence that he even knew they were armed, let alone that they pointed any weapons at him. So I guess he figured out when he was jogging up that the guy had a shotgun and he's like, oh, I guess I'll use that to take these guys out. Again, the question as to motive, like, why would he do such a thing? Why would he do such a suicidal thing as attack and try and get a hold of a weapon? I have a theory. It does accord with the facts. I'm not going to say it's conclusively proven, but I will tell you shortly. So here we go. This, to me, is the key to the whole mystery as to motivation. This is from The Star. From May 7th, this was Thursday, it's 2 days ago, as of this recording. Georgia shooter's father, previously investigated victim, Ahmaud Arbery. Here we go. Greg McMichael, who provided gun cover for his son as he fought and eventually shot a young black jogger. Again, you got to watch this language. He was not jogging. He was attacking. Anyway, Greg Michael may have known the victim long before their encounter in a subdivision just south of Brunswick, Georgia, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution has learned. Here we go. In his letter of recusal to Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr, Roger Barnhill, the guy we just heard from, wrote that his son, a prosecutor in the Brunswick DA's office, and McMichael, then an investigator in that same office, quote, both helped with the previous prosecution of Ahmaud Arbery. McMichael, a former Glynn County cop, told Glynn police he recognized Arbery from the surveillance video that captured a recent burglary in his mostly white neighborhood. He said he planned to make a citizen's arrest. Right, so here we say, when he was in high school, I think he was 19 though, so anyway. When he was in high school, Arbery was sentenced to 5 years probation as a first offender on charges of carrying a weapon on campus and several counts of obstructing a law enforcement officer. He was convicted of probation violation in 2018 after he was charged with shoplifting, court documents show. So, this to me is the key to the whole thing. And I'll tell you why in a sec. So, as we know, of course, just on Wednesday, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation reported that Gregory McMichael, a former law enforcement official, and his son, Travis McMichael, were arrested in connection with the February 23rd shooting of Ahmaud Arbery. This, of course, occurred 74 days after the killing. I'll get to my conclusions in a second, but let's just ask ourselves this basic question. So two guys chase you down and step in front of you. They're armed. They tell you to stop running. The police are on their way. What should you do? A, wait until the police arrive. B, ignore them. Continue running. C, call the cops yourself. D, attempt to come to a peaceful resolution. Start a dialogue. Or E, attack. Try to grab one of their guns and proceed to kill them both before the other person can shoot you. I think we all know the more reasonable answer to that, which then comes to the question of what was Ahmad thinking? What was going through his mind? Of course, we don't know at this point, and we'll never know, but there's reason to believe that we can know based upon the relationship that we just talked about. So, okay, a couple of comments, and then I'll tell you what I think happened according to reason and evidence. So, with regards to this horrific encounter, we have to divide the sequences into the legal and the illegal, just as we did with Michael Brown and Darren Wilson, just as we did with George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. What is legal and what is illegal? It is legal to drive down the road and demand that someone stop. It is legal to make a citizen's arrest. It is legal to be armed while doing so. And certainly, Gregory McMichael knew the law deeply and well at this point. He had been a cop, an investigator, a detective for many decades. Now, the idea that Ahmad Arbery was unarmed is false. Listen, when you're grabbing at someone's gun and trying to use it to shoot them with and shoot their father with, you're no longer unarmed. He was not unarmed. He was grappling for a weapon, and he may very well have shot the weapon himself. He was not unarmed. And to say that he was unarmed when he is grappling at a weapon is just inaccurate and inflammatory and wrong. Now, when people say, oh, the police are on their way, it's a citizen's arrest, you're safe. You may be in trouble, but you're safe. Now, the thing also that troubles me about this so much is that the justice system itself failed. Because this young man, right, Ahmad Arbery, had been in a school basketball game with a gun. He'd run. He got 5 years probation. He'd violated his probation by stealing, and nothing happened to him because there are these reports of his mental illnesses or mental issues and so on, which are kind of contradicted by other people and so on, but nothing happened to them. So why was it so important for Gregory and Travis McMichael to grab their weapons before going to perform the citizen's arrest on Ahmad Arbery? Well, because Gregory McMichael had been part of the investigation into Ahmad Arbery in the past, which means he knew everything about the young man. He knew about his history, his weapons charges. He knew about the shoplifting. He knew about the violation of probation. And therefore, he knew that the young man could be armed and dangerous since he'd had a weapons charge in the past. Now, if Ahmad Arbery was out there for purposes of theft, and again, we'll find this out perhaps as the investigation goes forward, as the trial goes forward, but if he was out there, if he had a hammer on him, if he had gone into this largely empty building or empty building in order to get a hammer, if he's on video scoping out houses and so on, and if, of course, he had been seen going into the almost completed house illegally, then he was in significant trouble. He was in significant trouble. Now, I want you to picture this. Ahmad Arbery comes out of the house that he went into for reasons unknown, illegally. And someone's on the phone saying stop, or the police are coming, or I've called the police, or he knows someone's calling to 911. He can hear the conversation, and he's like, oh man, I'm busted. And he runs. Now, if he was in there, it's like, oh man, I really had to use the bathroom, and this place was available, although I guess he could have gone to the porta potty out front, or what, could have explained something, could have sat there, could have waited, something could have happened, but instead he ran. Okay, now, if you are an investigator with the police, it is very common for you to engage in conversations with the suspect. Now, I've looked this up, and it seems to be fairly standard. You've got to ask questions. You've got to get their side of the story. You've got to confront them with evidence and so on, right? So if this is the case, then Gregory McMichael had sat across the table in the past, perhaps a year and a half, 2 years before, in 2018, had sat across the table from Ahmad Arbery during the investigation into the shoplifting. And he would have known all about the 2013 guns charge. In which case, you understand, this is not two strangers. These are two people who've sat across from each other in a highly confrontational and highly charged legal and police setting. Now, Gregory McMichael may have been listening to the police scanner. He may have been listening to his neighbor. And he looks out, and the guy who got away, right, because he didn't suffer any repercussions that I can tell for violating his probation in 2018 with the shoplifting, so Ahmaud Arbery, is running past his house, and he's like, oh, man, he was just in that house illegally. This guy who got away, he's not getting away this time. This guy who got away last time, and cops kind of hold on to this stuff. You know, there are cops who work cold cases years after they retire. It bothers them. There's always the one that got away. So Gregory McMichael sees Ahmaud Arbery booting down the street, and he's like, not this time. No, you are not getting away this time. Now I've got you. Couldn't get you in 2018. Got you now. Right or wrong? Now, whether it's because he's running past Gregory McMichael or sometime later, Ahmaud Arbery looks up and sees, as he's running away, the face of the investigator who sat across him in the police station and cross-examined him or gave him evidence or asked for his side of the story or took notes or interviewed him in some manner. And he's like, oh, man, what are the odds? What are the odds that I run out of a house I'm in illegally with maybe incriminating stuff upon my person? And who do I see right there? The investigator from the police station. So then he runs. But, of course, as he runs, he's calculating. And what's he calculating? Well, he's calculating that he's screwed. Because now he's not just some guy running down the street that maybe later someone will try and pick out of a lineup while he was running past, scrunching up his face maybe. Now he's looked into the eyes of a guy who knows, Gregory McMichael, who knows exactly who he, Ahmaud Arbery, is. So there's nowhere to run now. There's no escape. And this is strike three, right? 2013, gun. 2018, shoplifting. 2020, well, trespassing, burglary, who knows, right? So Ahmaud Arbery is running, thinking, I can't run. What can I run for? The guy knows exactly who I am. One phone call, boop, here they come, right? Now, maybe he doesn't see Gregory McMichael as he boots past him, as Gregory McMichael is on the lawn watching him go. Maybe he's just running, doesn't even see. But I'll tell you where for sure Ahmaud Arbery is going to see the face of Gregory McMichael, who investigated him. We know from the video that it was the son, it was Travis, who was driving the truck, which means that his father, Gregory, was in the passenger side. Now, if Ahmaud Arbery is running along the side of the street, right-hand side of the street, what happens? You pull up, and it's not the driver who talks to him, it's the passenger. So Gregory McMichael rolls down the window, sticks his head out, and says to Ahmaud Arbery, stop. Stop. We want to talk to you. And then, at that point, Ahmaud Arbery looks into the face of a cop who knows him and knows his history, and he was going to put him into jail. There's nowhere to run to, because it's incomprehensible. Why would he run towards the truck if he fears the people in it so much? Why wouldn't he run the other way? Why didn't he dart sideways? Why wouldn't he jump over some fences? There's tons of places for him to go, but he runs straight towards the truck. Why? Because he's not going to jail. He says to himself, he's going to take the biggest gamble there is, try and get a weapon, try and shoot them, maybe disable them, get away. There's nowhere to run because he's been made. Gregory McMichael knows exactly who he is, and he knows who Gregory McMichael is, and that's why he made the decision, I believe, to leisurely run up to the truck, run past the truck, and then dart left and attack Travis McMichael with the goal of getting the weapon in order to kill both men so that he could escape with no witnesses. Or no witnesses who knew who he was, because he's been made. He's been made. He's been identified. That's what makes sense. It's tragic. It's a bad decision, obviously. But that accords with the facts. Now, please understand, this is a theory. I'm not a lawyer. I don't have access to this kind of direct evidence. It will perhaps come out during the trial. But even if Ahmaud Arbery had never met Gregory McMichael, but Gregory McMichael had studied Ahmaud Arbery for the courses of investigation, it's entirely possible that Gregory McMichael said, oh, your name is Ahmaud Arbery. I know where you are. I know your history. You're going to jail this time. This is a citizen's arrest. Stop. So I believe that they knew each other. Investigators routinely meet with suspects. And that's what happened. That's how it went down. That's why Ahmaud Arbery attacked. Because there was nowhere to run. And because he couldn't run, and he didn't want to go to jail, he tried to fight. And he lost. And it's tragic. And I think that this is a lot to do with institutionalized failure, because if the justice system had dealt with Ahmaud Arbery when he violated probation, then this would not have happened. But again, these are all causes. So we gotta stop doing this kind of stuff. I mean, I know it's an election year, at which point the mainstream media is going to try and whip up all this race hatred and all of this animosity and hostility and the white supremacists. And come on, like, we gotta stop doing this stuff. We're all living in the same society, in the same world. We have got to find a way where we can join arms and face the facts and face the truth rather than face each other with fists in the air. This is not going to work out for us as a society, as a species, as a nation, as a civilization. It's going to work out terribly. It's very bad. And the media loves pitting us against each other, right? Ooh, these white supremacists or this black criminality. And let's stop that. You know, when the devil extends his hands and says, I invite you to hate, don't we have to slap that claw away and live better and live right and face the facts and stop blaming and stop attacking and stop getting hysterical? Wait for the facts to come in. Wait for the data to come in. Because here's what's most likely going to happen. And this is why I'm putting so much time and effort into this video. Here's what is most likely going to happen. The prejudice and the hysteria around this case are going to be surging up to what hopefully is the blank, objective wall of facts, reason, and evidence in the court of law. And these two men, Gregory McMichael, Travis McMichael, are going to be acquitted. And then what's going to happen? Oh, the whole system is racist, white privilege, supremacy, blah, blah, blah. And then what do you get? You get riots. You get arson. You get murder. You get looting. You get theft. You get old scores being settled in back alleys in the chaos of an LA-style post-Rodney King hellish landscape of endless rioting and brutality. And the people in poorer communities are the ones who are going to cough on the smoke and suffer the most. How about we break this cycle? How about we stop using inflammatory language? How about we wait for the facts? The alternative to facts, the alternative to reason, is only violence. And we need to step back from that brink. Because if we take one more step forward, the fall could very well be forever. One day people will learn to listen to me, to listen to reason, and withhold judgment until the facts come out. This is the updated truth about Ahmaud Arbery. And new video has emerged. And we will get into what that means. But I have been tussling on Twitter and other places for the last day or two. And I'm going to present to you what I've learned about the common objections and how at least I would respond to them. Okay, so the video has been released of Ahmaud Arbery, who, of course, was supposedly, you know, according to the narrative, jogging through the neighborhood and then shot down by two good old boys in a stereotypical Confederate flag, don't tread on me pickup truck while he was minding his own business. Well, first of all, the video has emerged. You may remember this from my first Truth About Ahmaud Arbery video. This is the house that is renovated, under construction. It's hard to say. Some people have said, oh, he was just looking at the foundations of a building. No, this is a mostly closed-in building. The owner, who's in very bad health, lives some time away. He has this on his bucket list to finish, but he's not got round to it yet, and he's facing a rather horrific time of things at the moment with death threats and protests outside of his house and you name it. So this house is there, and Ahmaud Arbery strolls up. He's not running. He's not running. He strolls up. He walks in. He stays several minutes, about 4 minutes, it would seem. He goes in through the garage, comes out, goes in through another entrance, and then he sees an excited man, this neighbor, on his phone, right? And Ahmaud Arbery then sprints away. Okay. So, not jogging. The entire beginning of the incident had nothing to do with jogging. And because you can see inside the house here, I'm not going to play the video, but it's a strange thing. So you can see the shoes here, the speculation about Timberlands, the speculation about work boots and so on, not the case. He appears to be in sort of sockless running shoes or something like that. So he's inside the house. Now, what's strange is that he's inside the house for 4 minutes, give or take. But on the news, all you see is an eternally looped 7 seconds. Well, come on, if you have the video, show the whole video. Why on earth wouldn't you show the whole video? That just seems to me, maybe they don't have the whole video, in which case, why is only a couple of seconds of the video released? But so he's not jogging. He walks up to the house, he goes into the house, he strolls through the house here, and what he's doing there, don't know. Don't know. We can speculate, and I'll tell you the bombshell at the end of this presentation, but those are the facts. So we will unravel this together. It's a little bit contradictory, but it can be ironed out. So, of course, as you remember, Gregory McMichael told the police that there'd been a string of burglaries in the neighborhood, and that's one of the reasons he was suspicious. Now, police have reported that there was only one burglary in the neighborhood, but let me tell you, it's a little bit of a doozy, and I'll tell you why in a second. Now, according to the Daily Beast, a man building a home in the McMichael's neighborhood said someone stole $2,500 in fishing gear from him earlier this year, but he never reported the theft. Now, that's interesting, right? Now, I assume that this is the home that Aubrey was inside of when he left and then started sprinting down the street. But yeah, $2,500, man, that's a lot of fishing gear. That is, that's probably not just a broke fisherman who truly intends to return it. That's like sold, fenced, stolen, you name it, right? So he never reported the theft. Now, there's a really, really important reason for that, which I'll get into in a couple of minutes. Now, the second theft, this is pretty wild. When you think of the coincidence of this kind of stuff, the second theft was reported to police by Travis McMichael, right, son of Gregory McMichael, who said a 9mm pistol was stolen January 1st from an unlocked vehicle parked outside his home. Now, what are the odds? Miles and miles separate these two people, but Ahmaud Arbery ends up in this neighborhood, and there are concerns about theft. And then a gun goes missing from the son of the chief investigator who investigated Ahmaud Arbery. That is a pretty wild coincidence when you think about it. I mean, yeah, okay, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon and all of that, but wow, that's that would give you some reason to be concerned, to put it mildly, right? Because the guy's around, and this is probably one of the reasons also why they thought he might be armed. Now, let's look at the law again. I'm not a lawyer. This is just what I've read. I'll put the links to it below. So Ahmaud Arbery entering the building is not considered a burglary per se, the house under construction and so on. It's still a dwelling, but I get all of that. He did commit criminal trespass by entering the property without permission. Now, if he did intend to steal or did steal something, it goes to first degree burglary, which is a felony. And this is all very interesting. Now, I want to talk for just a second because, you know, I try to dangle a little old philosophy into the water here. Ooh, let's extend the fishing stories. So a lot of people were like, oh, you know, if he stole, it could give him the right, but he didn't steal, therefore it didn't give him them the right to perform the citizen's arrest and so on. Look, it's two talking points that the moment they come up, I just completely glaze over and assume that I'm dealing with somebody whose brain has been largely filled with pudding or porridge. Now, when people say, ah, but it turned out he didn't steal anything. Ah, but it turned out he wasn't armed. Unless you can tell me the exact price of Apple stock tomorrow, I don't care what your 2020 hindsight tells you. We all have to make decisions in the moment without the infinite knowledge of predetermined facts that come flowing down through the passage of time. We all have to make decisions in life based upon the fog of war. And so everyone who's like, ah, but it turns out, just tune them out. Tune them out. It's like saying, ah, well, it turns out that somebody was found not guilty, so there's never any reason to arrest anyone. It's like, you don't know that ahead of time. That's the whole point where there has to be this kind of process. And even like people I like, people I respect, there's Tim Pool, who I like. I'm not sure he's really embracing the ball too well, but I liked him. But even he is saying stuff like, trespassing should not warrant a death sentence. And that's the second point where it's really, really hard to take people seriously. Look, Ahmaud Arbery was not shot for trespassing. He was not shot for stealing. He was not shot for jogging. He was not shot for being black. He was not shot for running. He was not shot for being in a white neighborhood. He was not shot for any of these things at all. And it's specious sophistry to even hint otherwise. Nobody gets a death sentence for trespassing at all. I mean, legally, right? Ahmaud Arbery was shot, and we don't even know who pulled the trigger. But how did he end up getting shot? Because he trespassed? No. Because he ran? No. Because he was in a white neighborhood? Because he was jogging while black? No, 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 no. Ahmaud Arbery ended up getting shot for one reason, and one reason only. That he charged a man armed with a shotgun, punched him, and attempted to wrestle the shotgun from him, which gave Travis McMichael the perfect right of self-defense, according to the DA, according to senior legal counsel, according to cops who reviewed it, according to right? So please, anybody who says he was shot for trespassing, you shouldn't have to die just because you're jogging, you shouldn't have to die just because you were running. I don't even know what to say. I mean, I don't know, are you playing to the crowd? Are you trying to appease the mob? Trust me, it ain't gonna work. So someone saw Arbery in the house before that person called 911. And then Arbery is hauling ass, as Gregory McMichael says, as he goes past Gregory McMichael on his lawn. And so Gregory McMichael hears about this and goes in pursuit with his son of Arbery. Now, there's a lot of other confusion around this. I saw this on Twitter all over the place. Ah, but you had two rednecks chasing him down, armed and so on. It's like, having a gun on your person is not the same as brandishing it, of pointing it at someone, of threatening them with the gun, which is illegal in Georgia, as most sane places, right? So this idea that they were somehow using their weapons in a threatening manner in order to get compliance out of Arbery is nowhere supported in the video that I can see. Now, maybe there's other videos, maybe there's other eyewitness statements we'll see over the course of the trial. There's no place in the video where you see Travis McMichael raise or point the shotgun, or that I can see Gregory McMichael holding out any kind of weapon or anything like that. So them being armed is not the same as them being threatening. And according to what I've seen, you kind of have to carry openly the shotgun in Georgia. So let's look at the statute, or this is a description of the statute, and I'll put the link below. Carrying long guns. Long guns may be carried without a valid weapons carry license. So long as an individual is not prohibited from possessing firearms, which Travis was not, he or she may carry the firearm in any authorized location without a weapons carry license. The long gun may be carried either openly or concealed, so long as it is unloaded, meaning no round in the chamber. If the firearm is loaded, it must be carried openly and in a, quote, fully exposed manner. But it can still be carried without a license, right? Now, I don't know the status of a concealed permit. I'm not sure how useful a concealed permit is for something as big as a shotgun. But as far as I understand this, it means that, of course, Travis was holding his shotgun because you're not allowed to hide it. And holding a shotgun, even while yelling at someone, is not the same as pointing your gun at them. As far as I understand it, that is not even on the same, it's not like a worse thing or a better thing. It's just not in the same category at all. And so this idea that, well, you know, he was holding a shotgun and he was shouting orders, I get that that might be alarming, but as far as the law goes, you're in a worse situation legally if you're not holding the shotgun, but you have one, and you have access to one. If you're not visibly showing the shotgun, that's a bad thing. It must be carried, says this, openly and in a fully exposed manner. So, oh, and I wanted to mention one other thing as well. The owner of the house that Arbery was in has said that nothing was stolen and so on. I personally think, again, that's kind of fear because of crowds and so on, but he did say that. Let's get into the family. This is from District Attorney Barnhill that I quoted fairly extensively from in the last presentation. And let me tell you why I'm pointing this out. So look, we do have two guys, you know, they've got their faults. You can call them impulsive and so on, right? This is Gregory and Travis McMichael. You have two guys who have no history of problems with the law, right? Squeaky clean. And, you know, one of them, I don't know what Travis Dunn is not sort of noted or recorded. I don't know. I did ask this on Twitter, didn't get any clear answers. What Ahmed Arbery did for a living, I've not really heard much about that. Did seem to have some pretty nice kicks. But so I'm quoting this because you've got two guys on the squeaky clean side of the law. One, of course, who'd been in law enforcement for, what, more than three decades, right, since 1985 as a cop. I've heard a couple of things which we'll get into. So you've got one squeaky clean side of the equation. Doesn't prove innocence at all, right? These are just facts to bring into bear. This is what D.A. Barnhill is talking about with regards to Ahmad's family. He says, quote, "This family are not strangers to the local criminal justice system. From best we can tell, Ahmad's older brother has gone to prison in the past and is currently in the Glynn jail without bond awaiting new felony prosecution. It also appears a cousin has been prosecuted by D.A. Johnson's office. Ahmad, the deceased, had a juvenile and adult felony record. In that regard, given the connection between myself and my son having worked with Greg McMichael for several years, and now known that he and Greg McMichael both helped with the previous prosecution of Arbery, I believe it is in the best interest of justice to recuse both myself and my office from this particular investigation." So, it is, there's a lot of crime in the family, according to D.A. Barnhill. This does not, of course, and, I hate having to say this kind of stuff, but I really, really want to be clear. It doesn't mean, of course, that Ahmad is a criminal or in this situation or is in the wrong or was definitely stealing, but it is something to take into account when weighing the need to wait for evidence, right? Because this, look, older brothers can be very influential on people's lives. A family culture can be very influential on people's lives. And it does speak to the origins of this young man. And I'll tell you something, too. Like, seeing the picture from, I think it's his high school picture where he's got the tux on, right, Ahmad Arbery. And then seeing, some years later, his sort of hardened, cold face with the mugshot and so on. And, it's funny. You look for Google, you look for Ahmad Arbery mugshot, and all you see is the mugshots of the McMichaels. But it's really tragic. Like, it's really sad whatever happened to that young man, because, he did have kind of fresh face and positive look on life, and then just, hardened stone face stuff that happened later. It's really sad. It really sad. That sort of remind me of the sadness. I did a whole podcast on how terrible it was, what happened to Freddie Gray and all of that. It's just, it's terrible. It's a terrible whatever that can draw people into this life. So let's talk a little bit about the citizen's arrest. So here's the relevant statute. A private person may arrest an offender if the offense is committed in his presence or within his immediate knowledge. Right? So that's really important. Get to that. If the offense is a felony and the offender is escaping or attempting to escape, a private person may arrest him upon reasonable and probable grounds of suspicion. So did the McMichaels have direct knowledge? Well, of course they did. The trespassing had just occurred and they called the police. Right? They called 911, or at least Gregory McMichael called 911. So, the answer to that is, of course they had, right? Within his immediate knowledge, which is talking to the guy who's pointing, saying, that guy, the black guy, was just in the house. So that is immediate knowledge, right? So they certainly had, maybe there's some weird wrinkle to the law. I'm just telling you, what a reasonably intelligent person would, I think, understand, trying to stay free of prejudice and just looking at the facts, right? So they are thus authorized to grab and hold a person, and they can use force. Now, they can't use excessive force, right? So they can't shoot him, right? I know this, it's going to set off all kinds of alarm bells, but they did shoot him. It's like, no, we'll get to that, right? But you can use force in a citizen's arrest, and excessive force is not allowed, which means, I don't know why. I mean, who knows what excessive force? I'm sure that's something that's adjudicated in a court of law, but you are authorized to grab and hold a person and use as much force as is necessary to prevent them from escaping, right? So the place that you see citizens arrests quite a bit is in shoplifting, right? Because if somebody darts out the shop, they're going to disappear down the street or disappear into a crowd or whatever it is. So a lot of times you'll be held until the police comes, and you can use force to grab and hold a person using the citizens arrest statute. And so here's an important thing, right? So this is from heavy.com, which is actually kind of a surprisingly good site for these kinds of things. Quote, McMichael, 64, previously worked as a police detective and chief investigator for District Attorney Stephen Kelly. According to documents from Brunswick, where the shooting took place, he retired from the profession in 2019. Okay, so this is really, really important. Would Gregory McMichael know and understand the conditions required to make a citizen's arrest? Chief investigator, police detective, he'd been a cop. I don't know if he'd worked on the street. I assume so, over his 30-plus years on the force. Would he know the conditions necessary to make a citizen's arrest? Now, this doesn't mean he can't be wrong. Doesn't mean that they might find out later that... But it's reasonable grounds of suspicion. Did he have reasonable grounds of suspicion to assume that there was a reasonable chance that Ahmed Arbery had taken something from the construction site? Construction sites are notorious for people coming in. They take power tools, they take copper wiring, they take lumber, they take materials, they take whatever, right? And so this is one of the big challenges. And because the owner lived like a long way away from this house, you know, it's not particularly well guarded and so on, right? So you have to ask yourself, would Gregory McMichael know the conditions necessary for him to make a citizen's arrest? And would the district attorney also know the conditions necessary for Gregory McMichael to make a citizen's arrest? And would the senior legal counsel who reviewed the case in the letter that Dunhill sent in April, right, they reviewed the case, would the police, would everybody involved who reviewed this at the beginning, including the man who committed the citizen's arrest or tried to, would they know the conditions necessary to make a citizen's arrest more so than you or I or someone out there on Twitter? Now, this isn't saying that it's moral or it's good or it's right. You can question the law, you can do all, but in terms of the rules of the game, was it a legal move? In terms of the rules of the game, was it a legal move? And a wide variety of people with a great deal of expertise, what was it, Dunhill had 36 years of experience, you got 30 plus years from Greg McMichael, and then you got some people on Twitter saying, well, according to my skim reading of the statute, it wasn't like, come on. I mean, that's, and of course it was because the media whipped up, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so it doesn't mean that the cops are always right. But the question is, did he believe that he had the right to make a citizen's arrest based upon significant legal experience, right? He's not a lawyer, but I mean, you have to kind of know this stuff if you know something about the law, if you're a cop, right? So it means that they know the rules, what they can get away with, what is justified under the law. And again, according to the review, he was within his rights. And you arrest based on reasonable suspicion. You don't have to prove, obviously, you don't have to see this young man running out of this house with a fishing box or with a television or with whatever. You don't have to see that. You have to have reasonable suspicion. Maybe it was the baggy cargo pants with side pockets too. I don't know, whatever, right? But did he have reasonable suspicion? Well, sure. Did he have immediate knowledge? Well, sure. That's why he was on the phone. Because if he didn't have immediate knowledge, given that the theft had just occurred, how on earth could he possibly know about it unless he had some sort of immediate knowledge, right? Because here's the thing. If you're going to say a citizen's arrest is giving a citizen basically similar powers to a policeman, right? Now, if a citizen's arrest, which passes the barrier of you have immediate knowledge and you have reasonable suspicion, if it passes that barrier, it may be valid, it may be invalid, of course, in a court of law, but if it's invalid, then you're found to be innocent, and I don't know if you're going to have much of a claim against the person who committed the citizen's arrest. In other words, if it turns out that you didn't steal anything, okay, but did he have reasonable grounds to suspect that you did steal something if you were in a house that didn't belong to you for some time, right? Well, yeah, I mean, why else would you be going in? Oh, he's curious. Well, we'll get to that in a sec, right? All arrests where the suspect is found not guilty would result in criminal charges of false imprisonment, whether it's a citizen's arrest, whether it's a cop or whatever, right? So you understand, right? You have to, if people pass the barrier of immediate knowledge and reasonable suspicion, then it's a valid citizen's arrest in the same way that if you break a law in front of a cop and he arrests you, it's a valid arrest. That doesn't mean you're guilty. It just means that it is a valid arrest, right? So, and of course, the thing is too, like people are saying, well, they cornered him, they fenced him in, they boxed him in, they cut him off. Okay, but if you want, you got to watch the video. I hate to say it because it's a horrible thing to watch. You got to watch the video, right? Ahmad's path was not blocked, right? He was running around the car. You got, like, you're running around the right of the car. Travis is on the left. No guns being pointed at him that we can see, right? There's a bit where it waves off and all that. It's quite unfortunate, but it's tough to... I hope he doesn't get dinged for distracted driving because he was filming and driving. But anyway. So Aubrey goes round the truck and has the perfect right to keep running. He could have doubled back. He could have gone to either side. He could have, if he had a cell phone, he could have called. He could have gone up to a house and said, help me. I don't know what's going on. Any number of options. And where you have options, when you choose to attack, that's a choice. I mean, it's one thing if they've gotten cornered in an alley and they're advancing at him, pointing at the guns, then yeah, man, go for it. Self-defense. Absolutely. But I cannot see a point wherein guns are brandished at him, pointed at him, and so on. Like, you can have a gun open carry, and again, according to the law, the long gun, the shotgun, has to be visible. It has to be on full display if it's loaded, and I assume it was. So then it's not brandishing a gun to tell someone you want to talk to them or you want them to stop while you're holding a gun. That's not brandishing. Again, you have to hold it. You have to hold the shotgun. It's not a holster for it, right? It's not like Doom. All right. So, here's the thing. This is the clincher to me. It's a clincher. And this just came out today. So, this is the same house. The same house. And this is 2, maybe 3, maybe 4 instances where a guy who looks pretty much like Ahmed Aubrey is in the house, prowling around, all the way back to October 2019. Come on, people. I mean, look. I get there's outrage. I get that if you swallow this horrifying race-baiting narrative of, you know, the good old boys hunting down and shooting a young man in cold blood and execution. I mean, I get that's tempting. Outrage is like an addictive drug. There's something about people that just love being outraged and angry. But come on, people. You explain to me why this young man is continually returning to this house week after week, month after month. I assume the construction is still continuing, which means I think he's hoping that there's stuff in there that he can take. Why is he in there at night? Come on, people. I mean, I get it. I know... people want to have this race-baiting narrative. I'm not at all sorry. I'll be honest, I'm not sorry to take it away from you. I'm not, because this stuff is extremely dangerous and people are going to get killed. In fact, there's arguments that this has already happened, right? The sniper attack upon the elderly white couple who were visiting a grave. A black man took aim down a rifle and shot them. So I get that it's real tempting to get to this breathless narrative of outrage and shock and hysteria. But look at this. Come on, this is footage of the guy repeatedly in this house at night, all the way back to October. And according to the reports that I've seen, things went missing. Again, it's contradictory. I think the guy's been scared and saying, nope, nothing got stolen. I'm not getting involved. But the security cameras, as far as I understand it and what I've read, the security cameras were installed because of concerns about just this, right? So... when I think it was Gregory McMichael said that Aubrey had been caught on security cameras, I mean, that's what he's talking about. That's what he's talking about. Oh, please listen to me. I'm begging you. I'm on my knees begging you. Please listen to me. And if you don't want to listen to me, look at the facts and listen to reason. All right. So... let's just put it all together, right? So here's the situation as far as I see it. Speculation, it accords with all the facts. So there's been a string of break-ins, a string of things going missing. And so security cameras are installed, particularly in this house, right? Now, what do the homeowners do? Okay, so if you've ever been part of a community, you know who's good at stuff, right? Like, oh, I need to build a shed. Oh, Bob's really good at building sheds. I'm going to go talk to Bob or whatever it is, right? You know your local expert, right? So the local expert on the law, on cops, on crime and punishment, was one Gregory McMichael. So the homeowners who were scared of this, who were finding stuff going missing, the $2,500 worth of fishing equipment and so on, they go to Gregory McMichael, right? And they say, here's what I've seen. And they show him the footage, right? Which is, I assume, they'd had their I don't know, neighborhood watch meeting, or they'd sat, and so they show Gregory McMichael the footage, so he's seen this kind of stuff, right? So then he says, I assume, something like this. Oh, I know that guy. Yeah, that's Ahmed Arbery. I investigated him not too long ago. He once took a gun to a high school. An officer got injured chasing him down. He stole a television and just walked off, even though it was a probation violation. So yeah, this guy, he's a known thief, and he also has had a weapons charge in the past. It's a little dicey. It's a little dangerous, right? But, right, so what happens? So they say, oh, well, I guess we got to go to the cops, right? Now, I don't know if you've ever gone to the cops because something's been stolen, but you just kind of get a long stare, right? So once welcome to little story time for me, right? But once I had a vacuum cleaner stolen, I was carrying stuff to a car, left a vacuum cleaner by the elevator, went to the car, came back, vacuum cleaner was gone. Called the cops. Cops said, oh, I don't know, do you have a serial number? I wouldn't have the serial number for my vacuum cleaner. Even if I did, what are you going to do? He's like, ah, you know, just report it to insurance and whatever. If we see it, we'll be sure to give you a call. And he kind of almost laughed at it, right? Like, come on, right? What are you going to do, right? Because that's the thing, right? Somebody comes and steals something from your garage. What do you do? Call the cops. What are they going to do? Do you have any footage? No. Okay. if we come across it, we'll let you know. So, and there's another thing, I think, why Gregory McMichael might have some reason to be cynical, right? Because, man, you taking a gun to a high school, that's some scary stuff, right? High school basketball game. But Ahmed Arbery had taken the gun and he just got 5 years probation. Then he violated probation by shoplifting, stealing this television, I've heard it reported, and nothing happens, right? He's still out wandering around, working around, right? Maybe they don't want excessive statistics on black crime or whatever. It's a topic for another time. I actually got a whole presentation called The Truth About Crime. I'll link to it below. You can look at it. But so he says, look, we can go to the cops, but nothing is really going to happen. Now, if it was Arbery who stole the gun from Travis McMichael, now that seems kind of like an odd coincidence to me, that the son of the investigator who investigated Ahmed Arbery just happens to have a gun stolen from an unlocked truck in front of his house. That's kind of a coincidence. Obviously, it could be 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon and all of that, but if it was Arbery who stole the gun from Travis, which they may have thought about, given that he was a known criminal to them, then they would have a reason to be scared, right? Which is why they got their guns when they were going to go and execute the citizen's arrest. That's an unfortunate choice of phrase, but you know what I mean, right? And it's true. It's an unlocked truck in a mostly white neighborhood. That's kind of important. That's kind of the level of trust that's going on there, right? So my guess is that Greg says, look, I mean, you can go to the cops. Not really much is going to happen. The only way that we're going to be able to do something about Ahmed Arbery is we got to catch him in the act. So, man, just, you know, hey, if you're out in your yard, just keep an eye on that house across the street. Just half an eye out. That's all I'm saying, right? The only way that the cops are going to be able to do anything with Ahmed Arbery is we got to catch him in the act, right? So that's my guess as to the conversation that happened. Again, we'll find this out over the course of the trial. So then what happens? Well, they catch him in the act. So the neighbor says, we saw him. He's in the house right now. Oh, call 911, man. We're going to go and we're going to catch him now. We catch him in the act. You know, it's kind of blurry. They don't know what kind of quality camera they're going to get, what kind of quality footage they're going to get. So they try to catch him in the act. And the other thing, too, is that, again, Greg knows the law, right? Gregory McMichael knows the law. And so what his concern is this. His concern is that they catch Ahmed Arbery in the act, and then Ahmed Arbery takes off, right? And fleeing when someone says, hey, what are you doing in that house you're not authorized to be in, that it's illegal for you to be in? The moment you sprint, that's reasonable suspicion, because why are you sprinting? What you're sprinting is so that you can dump what you stole. If you stole anything, right? You would be sprinting so that you could, you know, throw it in a sewer and, you know, hit that it clown or whatever, right? So you, and we know this in the past, that Ahmed Arbery went and hid the gun when he was running in 2013 after he was found with the gun at the high school basketball game, right? So he runs and he gets rid of evidence, right? Because, you know, if you come from a family where there are a whole bunch of criminals, that seems to be the case, they're going to teach you their unholy way, so to speak, right? So Ahmed Arbery is running. Now, why is he running? So that he can dump stuff. Now, you can see in the video that there's two things on the road. Hard to see what they are, but maybe he did take something from the house. But he's running and he's going to dump it. Now, so here's what's going to happen if they don't catch him before he can dump things, right? So he's going to say, hey, man, I was just curious. I was just looking in the house and it's a misdemeanor and nothing's going to happen to the guy, right? They have to catch him with the stolen goods on him if he stole something. So that's why, in my view, again, I'm just telling you what I think, how it kind of plays out. So they then say, okay, this guy, we have to catch him in the act. Oh my God, he's doing it. We got to catch him before he dumps all of his stuff. Or at least we have to see him dumping it, which is why they're so desperate to keep sight on him, right? Because if they see him dumping stuff on the road, then they can say, oh yeah, no, he stole, we followed him, and this is, we saw him throwing it, and here's the stuff on the road. So if there is in fact stuff on the road, that's another reason why Arbery might have felt cornered, and now he's toast, right? So I think that's the sequence that plays out. And what is this all about? This is all about the institutional failure of the court system in Georgia. Like, you can look at these particular acts and you can say, oh, well, this guy and that guy should have decided. First of all, hindsight is 20/20, and it's the most boring thing in the world. Like, it's literally, it's as annoying as when somebody doesn't sell at the peak of something, some stock or whatever, and they sell, I don't know, 20% down, and you go back and you say, hey man, you know, you really should have sold at the peak. And it's like, yeah, but nobody knows, right? I know it's a silly analogy, but you understand this, like, hindsight stuff is just people trying to appear smart because they have infinitely more information based on the passage of time than the people actually trying to make decisions in the moment. The institutional failure is, I mean, it's wide and deep and big and all of that. I mean, it's whatever is going on with the welfare state. You know, the mom always seems to have a different name. Bad educational systems, bad job opportunities, mass immigration driving wages down for poor and minority communities. We've got courts not enforcing the law because they're probably afraid of being called racist if the stats for black crime are too high, and getting investigations from Obama's blah, blah, blah when he was in power. So there's a lot of things that are going on here that result in this kind of situation. And just trying to ding all of this stuff on one thing, one person, one event, one decision, you got to zoom out, man. You got to zoom out. This is the chance, you know, with this kind of horrible situation, we can either just be set against each other, which is kind of what the media wants, you know, black against white and rich against poor. And I mean, just always sowing seeds of division and hatred because, you know, crime gets them clicks and outrage gets them clicks. And it's horrifying. This is why they love war. They love war overseas because everyone tunes in. They love war at home because everyone tunes in and everyone gets outraged and they basically, you know, profiting off blood. It's absolutely horrible. It's a weird alchemy of turning blood into horrifying gold. But anyway, so we have to really look at much deeper and wider roots. What can we get out of this horrible death? What can we get out of this horrible death? We can start looking at the bigger institutions that lead up to this kind of stuff and stop pretending that everybody's just making decisions in isolation and there's no history and there's no prior knowledge. And anybody who's talking about this who doesn't even know that Gregory McMichael knew Ahmed Arbery deeply and significantly in the past. And I believe Ahmed Arbery also knew Gregory McMichael because a lot of time investigators will interview suspects and so on. Anybody who doesn't even know that deep history, oh man, just move on. They're just hacks. They're just propaganda merchants. And, you know, we can indulge in this kind of addiction of outrage and hatred. But, you know, the old saying, man, you reap what you sow. And let's stop before it's too late, okay? Thanks, everyone. Talk to you soon.